Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. You've seen it in social media. You've seen it in perhaps in blogs and other places. Adulting or hashtag adulting. What does that mean? Why do we make adult into a verb? And how do we, when do we become adults? What makes us adults? All fun questions to ask as we sort through this topic and continuing in our series on adulting. Today, we'll talk with a professional and more emerging adults about this particular topic, hashtag adulting. Thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for the fine work they do in helping us move into more adulthood as well. They do a fantastic job with higher education and supporting Faith and Family on Worldwide KFUO. You can find them in the sponsor section on the KFUO.org website. Joining me by phone this morning, our returning guest, Megan Miesler. She's a DCE, just like me, but also a licensed clinical social worker, which makes her far more qualified than I am to talk about this topic. She serves with Lutheran Counseling Services of Florida. Megan, welcome back to Faith and Family. I always love talking with you.
Thank you so much for having me back again. It's a topic I would love to address and talk about.
How are things in Winter Park, Florida with Lutheran Counseling Services?
Well, I would want to say they're a little chilly here today. But yeah, everybody in Florida is breaking out their sweaters and scarves. You know, it's at 65 degrees currently. So
get out your heavy coat.
It's difficult for us. Yeah. The heaviest coat we have comes out when we, you know, get into the 50s. So the things at Lutheran Counseling Services are fantastic, and the ministry is definitely growing down here as we work to serve our community in a variety of ways.
Tell me about how you serve with Lutheran Counseling Services of Florida.
Yes, so I am the Director of Programs at Lutheran Counseling Services. I run our school counseling program where we place six different counselors into eight different private schools across the Orlando area. And we also run an older adult ministry as well, placing a counselor at a high-rise here that's funded by HUD but is for older adults. And then I have my own clientele that I serve, mostly with families and children and adolescents.
So you serve with people of a variety of ages, but certainly this emerging group who are moving on to adulthood, adolescents.
Yes.
What, when you hear this or see this term adulting or hashtag adulting, what does that automatically bring to mind for you when you see that in social media?
Well, normally when I see that hashtag, it's, you know, this kind of parallel of trying to get my brain, you know, fixed on the fact that I'm an adult now. I think you usually see it with these, like, you know, funny quotes of the pressures of work or the pressures of maybe even parenthood at times, or just, you know, having to figure out your own budget or set boundaries for yourself that you didn't have to do as a teenager as much. And I think that's normally when I see this hashtag adulting come up the most.
When do we become adults? How do we make that transition? Let's start with this parent-child relationship, and when we are, you know, first perhaps maybe as a child, as a youth, thinking about being adult, and from our perspective, what does that look like?
Well, I think that, you know, legally you're an adult at age 18, and that impacts our practice at Lutheran Counseling Services, because as soon as somebody turns 18, you know, they need to make appointments for themselves. You know, they just have a little bit more of a responsibility that they need to figure out. But in a lot of families, I think it's hard because I don't think all parents have it in their forefront of their mind that what they're really doing in parenthood is getting their child ready to launch into adulthood. And so if we're not always parenting from that perspective of getting our child ready to launch, some of our teenagers, when they hit 18, aren't ready to take on all of those responsibilities that kind of hit them, you know, in a very impactful way.
When you're talking about launching, that reminds me of a movie about a very similar topic. It's probably a decade old now, with Sarah Jessica Parker and Matthew McConaughey, Failure to Launch.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever see that movie?
Yes, I have.
It's about parents who are coping with this idea that their son, their adult son, has not launched, has not moved on to his own independent life, and the ways that they go about trying to help him launch, and perhaps they've been enabling him to remain fully dependent on them in a number of ways.
And I think that if we don't always have that forefront, you know, because it's a progressive thing, you know, it's sometimes a lot when parents get a high school in their home, they just automatically say, well, you should be able to do this by now, and you should be doing these things by now. But if we as parents haven't prepared them, you know, in a progressive type of baby steps kind of way to be able to do those things, it kind of set them up for failure.
So what are some of the things that are important to happen at home while a child is living at home, or an adolescent, a youth living at home, that help prepare them for this emerging adulthood, or this next transition in life?
Well, I think one of the biggest things is, along the way, throughout childhood, we need to be making our child more and more independent, that they are capable of doing things on their own, and that they can experience some natural consequences of things. You know, I often see parents really trying to bail out their students or their children so that they won't have these severe consequences later on in life. But what happens when we bail out our child is they never learn how to fail and then pick themselves back up again. They kind of lose that resilient piece in them that then they don't carry with them when they actually do launch and leave our house, which is so important for our children to be able to understand and do that.
Now, one thing we have been trying to do in our family, we have a 3-year-old son, in order to prepare him to make decisions and accept consequences or the results of those decisions in the future, is we try to give him choices that don't have real significant consequences right now, but giving him choices so that he learns how to make decisions. For example, would you like to take off your coat first or take off your shoes first? Which would you like to do when we get home?
Right. And when you are, that's such a great thing, because when you are able to give your child the choices and they are able to make them, then it fills up in them this idea that I am competent and I am capable of doing all of these things. But when we continue to rescue our children or make decisions for them, in essence, internally, they begin to feel like, oh, I'm not capable of doing this without my parent. I can't make these decisions on my own. And so it eats at their self-esteem to think that they are not a competent and capable individual.
Hmm. So how do we increase, how do we get from those simple choices like, you know, would you rather have apples or carrots for snack this afternoon, to more serious choices and decisions that have more significant consequences? How do we progress from you know, those simple apples or carrots to something more significant, like, oh, which college to go to, or, you know, more, or what career path to choose?
Well, I think it is about the tone that you set in your home. So are your children able to discuss things with you? Or are you a parent who just says it and then that's how it is, fine, you know, that's the final decision? You know, when you're providing your child the ability to make these smaller decisions, do you provide opportunity for them to have this open format to talk with you about it? Are you a safe place for your child to figure out things about? We had an incident in our house the other day where, you know, I told you it's like 50 degrees here, so my children need to wear, you know, long sleeve shirts, and my son didn't want to. And, you know, I can send him to school not in a long sleeve shirt, and, you know, everybody will be like, why did Megan Meisler send her kid to school without a long sleeve shirt on? You know, am I okay with people turning around and looking at me like that when I allow my kid to, you know, suffer the consequences of being cold all day, so the next day he'll wear a long sleeve shirt? You know, so it is a bit about the environment you provide for your child, but it's also a bit about the parent. And are they willing to take some scrutiny from other people in order for their child to be successful?
I did see tons of people criticizing you for letting your child.
I know.
I saw that on Facebook. I can't believe what a horrible parent you were. You let him go in short sleeve shirts when it was 60 degrees.
Well, you know what? Today he wore a long sleeve shirt and I didn't even have to ask him. So he was fine.
So let's move up in years a little bit. We've talked a lot about childhood and those younger years. Now let's talk about transitioning from high school to college, or even beyond that, from college to first career, or even from high school to first career. Making those transitions, though, really moving away, perhaps even long distance. What's that relationship like between parent and child when they move away, whether to college or first job, and they're no longer at home? What's that relationship like between parent and child, and how do we cope with the changes in that relationship?
Well, I think it's so important for parents to understand what their child at that age, all through adolescence, and still when they go off to college, there's still a little bit of adolescence going on there, what that stage is, what they need to develop developmentally to be successful as an adult. And that stage right there is they need to form their identity. And what gets really hard for parents along those years is that their identity is no longer rooted in their family of origin. It's really rooted in their social life. And so allowing their children to be impacted socially by their peers and identifying with groups that they belong to is so important. And what they need for parents at that time, as they're leaving home and going off to college, is that home continues to be a safe place where I can return to emotionally. I can return there if I have failed or if I'm disappointed and upset, and I'm not going to seek all this criticism or telling me how to do things differently. So if we've created that, safety and security in our relationship with our children, when they leave and go off to college, home should be a safe place for them to return to when they're upset or discouraged, and they find encouragement and support there instead of criticism and ridicule.
What about that first job when they're transitioning to living on their own and taking on even more responsibility and independence? During college, there's some independence, but there's still some reliance on parents, I think, during those college years. For many, not all, but for many.
Well, and I think when they're going out and they're getting their first job, whether you as a parent agree with the choices that they've made, which is an important, concept, because we don't always agree with them, it still needs to be that place where I'm going to give you support. And I had to figure this out with my parents, too. I'll offer you my opinion if you ask me. Because it's not this place where we want to come to all the time and, oh, you should have done that differently. Oh, I think you should have done this. If the child isn't coming back and seeking that advice, because the relationship has to morph into, these are two adults talking now, and as a parent, you're always going to view your kid as your child, but they are an adult, and you have to continue to instill in them that they're capable and they're competent of getting their first job and making their decisions and, surviving if they fail.
What happens if we don't? What do you, are there, sure and certain outcomes if we don't necessarily view them as an adult, but rather continue to try to, share our opinion where it's not necessarily asked for?
Well, I strongly believe and worked with people that if you don't respond to your child that way as an adult, they won't keep coming back. They won't come back. And I'm not saying they won't physically come and visit you, but they won't come to you any longer for the emotional support that they need, which, ultimately, as we get married and move on, in our lives and in our relationships, a spouse may become that emotional support, but your parents can still be that place that you go to for, advice or encouragement, or still those type of cheerleaders behind you, encouraging you that you're competent and capable. But if we aren't giving that message, then I would expect that your adult child wouldn't keep coming and seeking you out as they face some hardships.
What about when that adult child completely fails. You know, something happens. The career fails, or mismanagement of their resources, and it completely mm-hmm. fails. They're desperate or in need.
Well, and I think as long as we've created that safe environment, then our children are going to, you know, seek us out and for support. And then, you know, I live in a college town in Orlando, and there's a lot of kids who, you know, stay in their parents' home up until they get that first career and then finally move out. And so I don't think it's, you know, abnormal in our society anymore that children come back to their parents' home as they, you know, as they fail or as they need more support. But what's so important when you come back is that relationship should not just morph back into a high schooler living in my house again. It has to be set up differently with some different parameters around what this relationship looks like now that I've come back home as an adult.
Good point. Not every student who goes to college moves away to go to college. Many mm-hmm. live at home, and that certainly can save quite a bit in terms of cost of living as well. For those who do go away for college, how can that be used as a time of transition? What types of things can happen during those college years to help prepare them for that independence, that first career? What do you see happening during those years when a student goes away for college that's helpful in that transition?
Well, you know, there's lots of factors for the student and for the parent when a child moves out of the house. You know, parents, I worked with parents that have strongly kind of mourned that child, it's almost like a loss of that child, you know, mm-hmm. physically in the home. And parents really do have to adjust sometimes to empty nest. Sometimes you have other kids still in the home. But they do have to consciously think about, okay, what is my relationship like going to be like with this college student? And, you know, if we've prepared our kids to launch appropriately, you know, we've allowed them to fail in our house and you know, work some of those things out, then not all students go off to college and, you know, bomb out, you know, because they've understood what disappointment is in within that safety net of being in the home. But some, you know, some kids go to college, and if that relationship with that parent has not been a healthy, safe place, they're going to go and try and all of these things that they weren't able to do under the confines of their home. Especially kids that come from very strict homes, we see a lot more rebellion in college. You know, once you're out of the house and, you know, you can do whatever you want, they go through those periods of just trying all these new things that they had wanted to do but weren't allowed to do. So sometimes college is still, you know, we still phrase them as adolescents until they're at least into their 20s. And kids in our society are going to college a lot earlier. And so there's still this adolescent period going on for students that are in college where they're still trying to understand who, their identity and who they are. And so they're trying to figure that out now without these parameters of parents being around.
Let's now turn back to that student who, that young adult who stays at home, whether for college or maybe the first few years of their career, living at home mm-hmm. with their family. How can parents help make that transition? What do young adults need to understand who are living at home? What's important for them to understand as they're preparing to make that transition, or maybe they're not preparing for that transition? What do we need to think about when it comes to that young adult living at home, whether for college or first career?
Well, I think everybody in that situation needs to understand that the relationship changes. And so I would encourage parents and have encouraged parents and adolescents, let's sit down and let's have a discussion. You've graduated from high school. You've chosen to live, you know, at home. And most of the times, in the situations I've worked in, it's the parents encouraging them to stay at home, honestly, you know, to save money and things like that. But let's have a discussion about how this relationship is going to change and be different, because that adolescent is now an adult. And, you know, they have rights in our society to make decisions for themselves. They have rights in our society for parents not to know about things that they are doing, especially like medically or like coming to our office. We can't, you know, give the parents a report, which, you know, maybe just 2 weeks ago they were so used to getting because their child was 17 and now they're 18. So I think there is an intentional discussion about how's the relationship going to change, and what are your responsibilities going to be? Because really, in order to get this real world experience, you know, they need to have their responsibilities. I keep hearing more and more from colleges who are working to remind parents that, you know, they shouldn't get reports on their students' grades in college. They can't call professors and talk to teachers. This is what the child is supposed to handle now, because they're no longer a child, they're an adult.
Well,
so
sure.
Everybody in that situation kind of has to wrap their head around the fact that this relationship is changing and more responsibilities need to be given to the adolescent who is now an adult so that they can understand how to manage themselves in our world.
I prior to coming to KFUO, I worked in higher education for a while. And in serving that, I worked closely with students and sometimes with parents as well. And you could tell in some relationships, in some situations, it was a rude awakening, especially for parents to realize that federal law in the United States prevents higher education institutions from releasing records to parents unless the student has specifically granted permission to parents or other adults to receive that information. The Family Education Rights Privacy Act prevents higher education institutions from releasing those records other than proof of enrollment that, mm-hmm. and a few other like public facts. That's, you know, public record type facts. That's it. I mean, they can't share grades or things like that. And it was a rude awakening for some parents, especially those who were saying, well, I'm paying for this education.
Yes.
Why can't I know how my child is doing, how my son or daughter is doing? And it was always an awkward moment as a representative of the institution to say, I can hear where you're coming from. That's a conversation you need to have with your student. Federal law prevents us from releasing any of that information that the student has not granted permission for us to release.
Well, and I honestly think, and I've encouraged people to do this in my office, is let's write a contract. You know, if I'm going to pay for your education, here's what I expect, you know, in return.
Mm-hmm.
You know, me going to college, my parents, I was lucky enough that my parents were able to support that too. But there is this understanding. I had to meet a certain GPA and I had to be working there were stipulations behind it. And I don't think that that's bad to do with our children. It gives them a taste of the real world. And a lot of times, especially parents who are prone to enabling, you know, we'll make excuses and say, well, they're not mature enough or they're not ready for that yet. But if you aren't providing the baby steps for them to get ready, how are they going to get ready for those type of things? You know, it's really on us as parents to be able to equip them to launch into this world of adulthood.
I really felt for the parent who could not, who didn't understand the registration process, which included placement testing, and tried to convince me that there was no way she could get her son there to take the placement test. And I don't think she grasped the reality that if he wouldn't come for the placement test, there's a pretty good chance he's not going to come for the classes and not going to finish the degree or move forward in his education. And that was, mm-hmm. I think, a huge, kind of a rude awakening for the parent. And I was trying to find a winsome way to communicate that to the parent, but it was a harsh reality that I don't think she had accepted yet. We are just about out of time. With just a minute left, anything you want to share with us or with parents or with those of us who are in that emerging, you know, hashtag adulting stage in our lives?
Well, I think in this hashtag adulting stage, there is this constant turmoil between I'm an adult, I'm over 18, and you're my parent, and you're always going to be my parent. Or you're my child, and you're always going to be my child. And I would encourage you as adults, I know it's hard, but have that conversation with your parents and say, you know, I am an adult now, and I love and respect you as my parent. Here's what I would like our relationship to look like. And have that conversation. Sometimes that's hard to do. We get scared to do that. But that is a way to be seen as an adult, to be able to prompt those type of conversations with your parents.
Megan Meisler, licensed clinical social worker with Lutheran Counseling Services of Florida. Always a pleasure to talk with you. Thanks for helping us sort through hashtag adulting. Great insights. Thanks for being my guest today.
Thank you so much for having me on again. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Coming up in just a little bit, we'll talk with some more adults, shall we say new adults, emerging adults, on this hashtag adulting topic. You're listening to Faith and Family on Worldwide KFUO.
Concordia University, Wisconsin in Mequon overlooks a half mile of beautiful Lake Michigan shoreline. CUW campus is located 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with over 70 undergraduate majors, 28 graduate degree programs, and doctorate programs in pharmacy, physical therapy, occupational therapy, and nursing practice. CUW offers online learning and accelerated learning at one of 9 Wisconsin centers and one in St. Louis. Traditional or accelerated education, CUW has the program for you. CUW.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
A few states have legalized assisted suicide. To hear them tell it, there's no downside to these laws. They merely provide a peaceful death to those who no longer want to live. But there's more to the story. It turns out the drugs to kill these patients aren't as effective as hoped. Some are too harsh, burning mouths and throats to the point of screaming out in pain. The deaths of many others are stretched out for long periods of time, in one case over 30 hours. In a Dutch study, some physicians had to intervene and outright kill the patients with injections. Laws here don't require supervision by doctors, so when things go wrong, they're on their own. Who knows what's happening in America when the goal is intentional killing?
For more information, visit our website at lifeissues.org and stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.
You're listening to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. We are talking about hashtag adulting. What does that mean? We see it in social media all the time. Our guest today to help us take a look at this from their own personal experience, from their own lives as adults. What does hashtag adulting mean for them and making that transition from youth to adult? What does that look like? Joining me by phone today, Naomi and Matthias Wolberg. Naomi, welcome to Faith and Family.
Thank you for having us.
Matthias, thanks so much for being my guest today. Thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, thank you.
Now, tell me a little bit about where you grew up. We'll start with Naomi. Where are you from originally?
Well, that's a bit of a complicated question because my dad is also a pastor. And so we live in a couple different places. I was born in South Dakota. I lived in Arkansas for 6 years. And then I grew up in southern Minnesota for the most part. And that's kind of where I consider home to be, since that was where I was the longest and probably the most influential time in my life.
And was that during your high school years? Were your high school years there?
Yes, they were. I moved there when I was 8 years old and then stayed all the way up to college and lived with my parents and my two older brothers. One of my brothers still lives in Minnesota and we go visit there sometimes. So we love it there.
How about you, Matthias?
Mine's more simple, I suppose. I grew up in central Nebraska. Kearney is the town. And, I have an older brother and two older sisters. So I'm the youngest of four. My dad, he was in church work. He was a director of Christian education for a little while. And that's actually what brought us to Kearney. Upon graduating from high school, I moved to Seward, Nebraska, where I attended Concordia there. And that's actually where I met Naomi.
What was high school like? What was life in high school like? Think back. Take yourselves back to those high school days. And what was life like? What was responsibility like? What were your responsibilities back in high school? We'll start with Matthias.
In high school, I don't know. I didn't have a whole lot of responsibility. Living with my parents, I suppose. A lot less than I do now. But I had a job. I went to classes, so pretty typical responsibilities for a high schooler, I think.
How about you, Naomi? How would you describe life in high school?
Well, I went to a public high school, and I think that overall it was a really good experience for me. There wasn't anybody at my high school who went to the same church as me, and so I didn't really have friendships that way. I kind of had to find other ways to build friendships other than
Baptist youth group. And so that kind of expanded my, my interest. I mean, different like cultural things and art things. So I was really involved in high school. I was in sports and choir and band and plays to get friends and to discover what I really liked doing. And so I suppose with all of those came responsibility to balance them and to do my homework. And my parents definitely didn't let me get away with not helping out at home. So I had a list of chores to do there and keeping everything up in my own room and that kind of typical high school stuff. So I thought at the time it was very stressful. Now I realize that it wasn't quite as stressful as I thought it was. But, yeah, it was a good experience.
So let's talk about when did you start realizing you're making this transition to adult life? Was it college? Was it after college? When did adulthood reality start to set in for you, Naomi?
Well, I think that I thought as soon as I went to college, I moved to a completely different state, and I couldn't go home on the weekends just whenever I wanted to. And I thought that that alone kind of meant I was living an adult life. I could choose where I went whenever I wanted and what I wanted to eat or whatever. And I thought that that sort of freedom of choice meant being an adult. Now, looking back, I think that that was only a small part of it. And I hadn't quite realized how many responsibilities were coming at me, which is a hard lesson that I learned throughout college. Less of choice and more of actually doing what I was supposed to be doing, whether I wanted to choose to do it or not. So I think that was definitely a lesson hard learned throughout college.
How about you, Matthias? When did the reality of adulthood start to set in? When did you think that you were becoming an adult?
I would say for me, it's kind of been a pretty slow and smooth transition. I would say even starting back in confirmation that the transition sort of began there. Currently, I'm a seminary student, so my focus, you know, right now is on becoming a pastor. And I've had that in mind ever since middle school. And even in high school, I came to some seminary programs in Fort Wayne. And then in college, I was in the pre-seminary program. So that's really kind of been at the core of it for me getting to where I am now as an adult. So I would say it's been a smooth transition from middle school all the way up till now. And gaining, of course, more responsibility along the way, especially going into college and living on my own, living in the dorms, that kind of life. And then that transition into being married and having a child as well. So it's been a pretty slow one, which has been good, I think, a smooth transition.
When you see hashtag adulting in social media, what comes to mind? What do you think of when you see that in social media, Naomi?
I think it's kind of funny, actually, because hashtag adulting seems the opposite of what being an adult feels like, because that, I think, kind of makes it seem like another inconvenience of, oh, I have, a paper due soon. Or it just seems a lot like it minimizes what encompasses actually having to take care of yourself, but also for a complete another person, and really, really letting go of yourself. And so, honestly, when I see hashtag adulting, I mostly laugh and say, oh, it's a lot more than that. Like, it's not something that I could just hashtag and that gets my stress out. And then I'm good to go.
What do you think, Matthias, when you see hashtag adulting?
Yeah, I would agree with my wife. It's pretty funny to see. At first it's kind of a laugh, like, oh, you know, we never had to deal with these kinds of things before, paying bills and things like that. Hashtag adulting, I guess. It's kind of funny at first, but after a while, I guess it does seem a little immature. I don't know, maybe that's too negative of a spin on it. But it's just kind of what you do. I mean, before us, obviously our parents didn't have social media and stuff. So I'm sure they complained and griped about that transition as well. And maybe it just took on a different form. So perhaps it's not even really that new of a concept. That'd be an interesting thing to look into, I guess.
You're right. Social media adds a whole dimension, a whole new dimension to this generation, doesn't it, when it comes to how we communicate, how we interact, and even it shapes our worldview, I think.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Well, let's talk more about making that transition to adulthood. What were, as you're making that transition into adulthood, were there things that about being an adult that you found surprising? Like, why didn't anybody tell me about this?
I'll just jump in and go first. I definitely feel that way a lot. And I don't know if I just wasn't paying attention when people were actually teaching me things, such as paying taxes and, you know, getting on insurance, things like that. I don't remember there being a class in high school. And I remember my parents certainly telling me about those things, telling me that I'm going to need to be responsible for those things. But I don't remember actually learning the how, the steps, the step-by-step process of it. And so that's something that kind of took me by surprise and was a big transition. And it still is, honestly. I mean, we've been out of college for almost 2 years, but I'm still learning really those very basic adult things.
It could be daunting navigating the world of taxes or insurance, certainly. And you're right. There aren't that many classes in high school that really teach you those things. Those are things that perhaps you can learn at home. I remember when I was in high school back in the dark ages, and we did have a class called Contemporary Living that taught about housing, whether it be rent or purchasing a home, you know, rent or a mortgage, and also a little bit about insurance and just, you know, managing a checkbook, balancing a checkbook, those types of things. It was only one semester out of my whole high school career, and it really encompassed a large number of things. Those were just a few of the items that were covered in that class. So we really just touched on them briefly, but when you get into those things, when you start filing taxes on your own as an adult, not a member of your parents' household anymore, filling out all those forms, that can be daunting, can't it?
Absolutely. And I had the same experience. I had a one semester class. And the thing that I took away from it is how to make monkey bread. I mean, I remember learning how to balance a checkbook, but all of those things, we briefly touched on. And so when it came to forms and forms staring up at me with a lot of phrases I didn't know, luckily I have parents who are very patient and will answer all of my questions, but it's daunting.
That's funny. We learned how to make biscuits from scratch, not quite monkey bread, but
still a useful tool.
So we took a similar class, and so when you touch on it briefly, that's somewhat helpful. So, but you're right, having that hands-on experience is even more valuable. Thanks be to God, as you pointed out, for parents who are willing to help walk you through all and answer the questions that you have along the way. But perhaps they had to learn by experience as well, and so may not be familiar with all those terms also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's something that's maybe different between our generations, and maybe this isn't true, but it seems that me and some of my peers, we need more of that step-by-step hand-holding a bit. And I, knowing my mother, and maybe that's just her personality, but she seems to be a go-getter, and she knows how to find those steps herself. And sometimes I feel like that's a tool that I'm really lacking. And maybe that's not a generational thing. Maybe that's something I just need to work on. But it's very interesting.
Matthias, were there things about making that transition, or are there things about making that transition into adult life that that were very eye-opening for you?
You know, I like to try and let Naomi take all of the hard stuff, so I don't really just deal with those things. I think you guys both make a good point. In high school, those classes, especially regarding taxes and those things, you know, you only get so much, and you're in high school, so how much are you really paying attention anyway? But then also, I mean, I guess one even bigger one is having a child. And, I mean, can anybody ever really teach you, you know, how to raise a child? Some of these things, I guess, you just have to learn through experience. And And there's some good things to that. And I think, you know, we learned from our parents, obviously, how they raised us. But there's just, yeah, there's no really concrete, formal way of teaching us how to do certain things. They just kind of happen to you, and you kind of learn how to do it along the way, I guess.
So, for example, when you share with someone that that your family is growing, and you know when you expect your baby to be born and or to join your family, and they share things like, "Oh, sleep now." You don't really grasp what that means until a baby comes along.
Right. Yeah, I think that is something that I certainly heard a lot, along with many other things. And I think there's kind of two parts to that. No, I didn't know what that actually meant. Last night I was up 3 or 4 different times. I don't really remember. It was a little foggy with our 7-month-old. But I was maybe naive, but there's also such a negative connotation with that, in the same way that they don't teach you how to deal with the responsibilities that are maybe more negative. There also seems to be this consistency of complaining and of only viewing the responsibilities as a negative thing. And so I heard a lot of, "Oh, make sure you sleep now." And I got kind of defensive, like, well, there's going to be really wonderful things to having a kid too. You know? They're not all bad. Otherwise, we wouldn't all keep having them. And so there's really two parts to that, I think. Yes, I was naive, and there's some things that you just need to learn on your own. But I think there could also be a change in attitude with responsibility and how wonderful things come out of those responsibilities. I do think that as the hard things increase, so do the blessings.
How so? Can you give an example?
Well, sure. I would love if our daughter would sleep through the night. I mean, if she's in our backseat right now, so if you're listening, I want you to sleep. But, you know, every time that she wakes up in the night, I know that this time when she's so small and needs me so much is going to be really short. And so as tired as I am, when she's up and I'm up with her, there's a part of me that wants to thank her for being awake. It's just a little bit more time together, a little bit more time to bond with her and to kind of ponder this wonderful gift that I've been given, and having a daughter and being able to love her, and also the possibilities of, you know, teaching her Christ's love and what Christ has done for her, and that her life stretches out before her, and how wonderful that is.
How about for you, Matthias, the things that, well, perhaps are negative connotations with adulthood, adulting, as the hashtag goes, but there are really positive aspects that you'd like to focus on. Are there any for you?
I don't know. I don't see, I guess, as many of the negative ones. I don't perceive of them as much in that way. I mean, obviously there are negative aspects to everything, to learning. Like, it can just be difficult sometimes, but at the end, you know, you've learned something, and there's a reward in that. Like my wife said, sometimes it is difficult having a 7-month-old, and you have to do so much for them, and they're so time-consuming, especially when you are in school. That's been my experience. That balancing act, it can be stressful, but it's definitely worth it. And knowing that we are given this daughter to fulfill our vocation as parents, and to, you know, bring forth another child of God, raise up another child of God. So it's a definitely rewarding responsibility to have.
And being a seminary family, you mentioned that you're studying at the seminary. Have you found that there are times that you feel like you're in limbo? I'm adult, and I'm studying. I have X amount of years more to study. Do you ever feel like you're kind of stuck in between because of your vocation as a student?
Yeah, there definitely is a limbo, I guess is a good term. Since we've really known is school, And so in a certain sense, we haven't known the real world, I guess, if you want to put it that way. We haven't been in the workforce or anything like that. So it is a little bit disorienting and trying to figure things out. But there are continuities as well, I would say. We receive a lot of support from the church and many different, several congregations. And that's the way life will be when I am a pastor as well. We'll be supported by our congregation. And that's how God will take care of us and how he does take care of us now. And we were supported that way even through college. So there is a lot of continuity. But yeah, to answer your question, it is kind of odd being in this state and with a child as well. But it's also a very good community. I mean, the seminary community, there are a lot of young families. So we've had the opportunity to learn a lot from some guys that are second career and have a little bit older children and have been through it. And then I have classmates who are my age who've just had their first child this past summer as well. And we're kind of all in it together, and we're kind of, in a sense, shielded from the outside world, the secular world, and their views of children and all of this. So we're very happy to be in this community.
So Naomi Mathias mentioned that his support comes from some of his peers who are the same age, kind of in the same boat, and those who are second career guys who've had children, who've raised children, and have experienced careers out in the rest of the world. What about for you? Who are the people that you look to for help, or perhaps as mentors or for support?
I am incredibly lucky here at the seminary because there's already a group set in place, the Seminary Women's Assembly, where a lot of the students' wives and deaconess students and even some of the faculty wives are able to come together and really be a wonderful support for each other. I know that maybe, like Mathias said, in the so-called real world, being 23 and already being married and having a child would seem a little odd, but in this community, it's not. It's wonderful, and people view it as what it is, which is a gift from God. And the women here understand that. And like Mathias, I have friends my age who are going through the same thing. And I have friends who are 10 years older than me, who have older kids, who can really help me along the way and give me advice and, you know, laugh with me, but also not be condescending or going back to, see, I told you never get any sleep, and having a kid would, you know, ruin your life. They understand what a wonderful gift it is. And so I definitely feel that seminary community, even though I'm not a student there. I'm still part of it.
How have you adjusted to married life as adults and new schedules? You talked about children. What about simply being married as adults, going from that life as living in your parents' house and your high school schedules, your college schedules, now adjusting to shared schedules as a married couple?
Yeah, you know, I mean, earlier I was saying it has been such a smooth transition for me to come from confirmation all the way up to this point, being in seminary. With that in mind, I would say for us too, it has kind of been a smooth transition, almost a seamless transition into marriage. And that's, I think, maybe our unique situation is that we got married right after college, and the very next day we got loaded up our car and drove to Fort Wayne. And a couple months later, we were pregnant. So it's just been a very smooth transition for us. We haven't really had time to necessarily just dwell on the fact that we were married. It's been almost organic for us, I guess. It's very, very natural.
And I would say that came even before we were married. We were really wonderful friends for a few years in college, probably my closest friend at college for a couple years before we even started dating. And then once we started dating, it was just kind of, like we knew that eventually it was going to end up in marriage. I mean, we were such good friends and knew each other so well, and what we wanted in life and what we viewed marriage to be, that We knew if we made that transition from friends to something else that it would eventually result in marriage. And so I think we've been very lucky with our smooth transition.
Now, as you look at your adult life, your hashtag adulting, what are the things that you think in your experience would fit that category of hashtag adulting? Or how would you redefine that hashtag adulting? Naomi?
Well, I think we've already touched on a lot of the things that when I think adulting, it is those small things. I had to change my name after I got married. So I had to, you know, go to the Social Security office and go through all those papers. And to me, that wasn't something that was really fun. And so I would, you know, say, hey, I got my name changed, hashtag adulting. That seems like a very adult thing to do. It almost seems like the things that we've all seen adults do in movies. You know, I've seen adults get married in movies, and I've seen adults change their names or talk about paying bills or figure out where they're going to live. You know, are they going to rent an apartment or a house, things like that. And it almost seems like adulting things are very outside of myself. I can't believe that I'm here in this place where I am married and have a child and I'm living so apart from my parents. So in my mind, it's like a movie almost. It's like, oh, I've seen adults do that in movies. And so that's a hashtag adulting experience.
Oh, wait, I'm in that movie now.
Exactly. It's a very odd experience. And that's I think, when the rolling of the eyes comes in and I say, oh, it's not as fun or it's not as glamorous. It's not like a movie. It's real life. And it can be a lot harder, but also a lot better.
So is it a comedy or a drama or sci-fi?
All the above, I guess. It all is just a little weird. But like Matthias had said, we haven't had time to dwell on things. Like maybe we've been so busy, we haven't had time to dwell on the fact of, wow, we're married. What does that mean for us? I kind of feel like at this point in our lives, we're kind of going through everything in that way. We don't really sit and think about all of these things that we're going through ourselves. We're just doing them. We're just, you know, checking things off and living life and trying to enjoy it and live out our vocations the best we can. And so that has helped in the, you know, rooting us in reality.
So perhaps it's not until, perhaps until retirement or until the kids are grown up and moving on to their adult lives that you'll have time to sit back and really reflect on it.
Yeah, I suppose so. And even then, I hope that we're still, you know, finding new things to do and, mm-hmm. and new things to busy ourselves with and enjoy.
We have just about a minute left. Matthias, anything you'd like to add to the hashtag adulting experience in your life?
Yeah, no, I think that the living in a movie that Naomi said, or that you're finally realizing that it's a reality to you, it's a good analogy. And I think even thinking back to when I learned the catechism and the table of duties, there's, you know, certain things in there, like regarding the sixth commandment in marriage and the fourth commandment about paying taxes, you know, honoring authorities in that manner. Those are things, you know, you're an eighth grader or middle schooler and you don't really know what those things are. But it really does, I think, prepare you. Now we're kind of realizing that aspect of the table of duty, and, you know, the other side of the fourth commandment of honoring your father and your mother, of being that father and being that mother. And what you know, we owe to our daughter and what we will owe to our future children as well.
Indeed. Thanks for bringing us back to the catechism. Great, great point. Well, thanks so much to my guests, Naomi and Matthias Wohlberg. Thanks so much for sharing your perspective as fairly new adults in this hashtag adulting experience. Thanks for joining us on Faith and Family. God's blessings on your studies and your time at the seminary.
Thank you, Andy.
Thank you so much.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.